sell things, which is really a future and stuff like that. It's not sort of right now. But the first thing I want to advertise that will be opened at the Q&A this afternoon is something very MySQL and traditional. And it's this. It's black vodka. It's called Somniac, and it's sort of a MySQL tradition to drink it at probably way too early in the day. So I'm going to try and get some cups and stuff so we can pour this out and have as much as possible.
If you don't like licorice, you won't like this.
Yeah, and it's if you don't, it doesn't actually taste like vodka. It takes all the edge off the vodka, so you don't actually realize you're drinking a 40% spirit. It's brilliant. yeah, medicinal purposes, and if it's in a Coke bottle, it looks surprisingly like Coke. May or may not know after drinking lots of it in Orlando. But do stick around for black vodka in a very MySQL thing. So I'm Stuart Smith, I said before, based in Melbourne, Australia, not Florida, which is more relevant when actually in Florida. There is a Melbourne, Florida. It's like 60 miles from Orlando. After spending 30 hours to get to Orlando, it's like, yeah. Melbourne's just next door. How much is in Orlando? Well, 400 less MySQLers now, so there's 400 less reasons to go there if there were any to go there in the first place. Yeah. No, we've all gone back home. Yep, we should mention some stuff like that. Yeah. So it's very open, this session, so questions or thoughts or wanting to go off on a tangent, let's just go and do that for a while and enjoy going off on tangents. Don't have to stick to any kind of schedule. This is not a sort of what's in 5.0 thing. It's not a what's in 5.1 thing. I don't think I'm mentioning a single thing that actually is new in 5.1. The idea is all upcoming, what's in development, what you might see in 5.1 plus 1, as in I think 6.0 we're calling it now, or even beyond that. So it's kind of a what we've been hacking on and working on and stuff that's around kind of talk. So ask questions, go right ahead, don't feel afraid. And first I'm going to talk a little bit about something that's called Maria. And apart from being, of course, a child of one of the founders, and it's actually the name of a new storage engine, which has the BitKeeper tree up now. The idea for the first release, which is, are they calling it Alpha?
No.
No? They're just calling it Release 1? Preview release.
It's
so it's called preview release based on 5.1. And the first version of it is essentially a crash-safe MyISM. So MyISM tables, if you crash the machine while you've got them open for writing, of course, you need to run a consistency check. And if it crashed halfway through running a statement, kind of be halfway there. It's as in it's more row consistent than transactionally consistent. Maria. Hello, computer. On recovery, it either rollbacks to start of statement, so each statement becomes atomic currently, or the last lock table statement. And in the next version of it, it's going to actually have proper transactions. So there will be a sort of transactional MyISM-like engine. A great benefit of it is that it's using a lot of code from MyISM. So the fact that it's mostly bug-free, MyISM is. So it's building on top of that instead of writing everything from scratch, which is possibly a good thing. But it is something that personally I'm hoping that we could start using a lot more instead of MyISM, just to get crash safety in there, because people write, you know, big tables, checking them takes a while. This way you get a bit more consistency in there on some of the default stuff. My personal fantasy is to someday switch the MySQL database to it. So, you know, the database with all the permissions and store procedures and stuff like that is all in MyISM tables. So you can actually crash and get into a bad state there. So hopefully we'll switch that at some point. Personal development goal. So you can actually get a preview out there now. And yep, and Giuseppe is giving a talk later and demo and demo. Oh, demo and some kind of like pull the plug thing.
Something along those lines.
Possibly something involving, you know, live demos, which of course is great, cool stuff. Next thing I want to talk a bit about is what we call batched key access, which is another thing I'm personally really excited about, which is a performance improvement for joins. So typically when joins are executed in the MySQL server, we execute a nested loop join. So you have, if you're joining two tables, you scan through one and you do lookups into another. And if you have more than one, then you just sort of nested and loop it all up. What batched key access work does is it uses the same nested loop join, so we're not using merge join or stuff, which is also in development, which is a different algorithm for performing joins that can give huge performance improvements, which some other database server has, and I forget the name of it. SQL Server does? We will at some point too. It's which does help on some specific, especially more complex queries with larger joins. It helps a lot. So we're still using a nested loop join, but what we're doing with batch key access is instead of going through each row and doing key lookups, it batches them all up. So you have much more efficient looking through the indexes of the tables you're performing joins against. So instead of sort of randomly poking in the index, you can then batch them up and look through it in order. And for engines like Cluster, or I guess even if you're using federated tables, if they do batched key stuff in there, I'm not sure. But for Cluster at least, it gives us a huge improvement in join performance. Because when you're batching up key lookups, we can do that in one round trip over the network instead of several. Which we're seeing about somewhere between on our tests currently 3 to 35 times speed improvement. The 35 times speed improvement is actually using MyISM. So it actually really does do a lot of benefit, even just doing joins on MyISM tables. These are relatively simple queries. So this is all in like development now, and we're currently throwing around sort of development trees between the teams. I guess it's a 6.0 thing. Don't quote me on version numbers and no promises on release dates. Yes, hi from my talk. I should close game. Should you use Twitter? It runs on MySQL, right?
Yes, it does.
It's the only productive reason to use it. Yeah, Ruby on Rails on MySQL. It's very buzzword compliant. So actually, batched key joins is actually something that's quite exciting from a performance point of view if you're using any kind of joins in there, especially ones using large data sets, you know, like doing multiple key lookups and stuff like that. So for cluster purposes, we're really excited because for us, it's been a real sore point for forever, really, doing executing joins, and especially non-trivial joins. But we're actually really surprised and pleased with MyISM speed improvements. They're also using the same thing for an ODB, so it should be similar results there. But I think the current state of the tree was it crashed within ODB. But still development, so that's cool for coming up. Also something I want to say a bit about is semi-synchronous replication, which you may or may not have heard of. This is currently a Google patch on top of MySQL, which they've ported to 5 now. The Google guys have a bunch of patches on top of MySQL that they could probably neither confirm or deny that they actually use, but they have developed a lot of extra patches on there. They'll admit it? Okay. They'll admit it that they actually use it. But so they have a repository out there of various patches, and semi-sync is one that at some point they hope to get to a state that would go into the main tree. But normal MySQL replication is asynchronous, as in you have transactions commit on the master, and it writes to a binary log, and then these are asynchronously applied on the slave. So if your master explodes in a flaming pile of computer, you may lose transactions because they're not on the slave yet. What semi-sync replication does is it delays returning transaction commit to the client program. So your client program does commit, the MySQL server goes and commits it locally but doesn't tell you it's committed yet, and then waits until one of the slaves has retrieved that part of the binary log from the master. So for every transaction you have, the client doesn't get a commit until one of the slaves has that part of the binary log. So you're not going to lose transactions. That transaction will be able to be applied on some slave. Currently, it's only wait for one slave, but possible modifications to have it more. And then you use some kind of other system on top of that to, when your master fails, find out which slave is the most current and switch to that being the master, which is not part of the semi-sync patch. But it's rather exciting kind of thing that changes the way replication works, that makes it, at least for some applications, exactly what they want, instead of having it all asynchronous.
Does that work with the row-based replication?
Does it work with row-based?
That is extremely unlikely, because the patches would be on four.
They've ported it to five. They've spent a... Yeah. They'll have to port it again. I'm not sure. Yeah. I would guess that it maybe works with row-based. So do people know what I mean when I say row-based replication? Okay, we have at least two heads shaking. Cool. So there's two ways that MySQL does replication. The way since 3.23 or whatever, when replication, or possibly 3.22, I forget, in the dim dark past when things were all small and simple, and MySQL replication started, and until 5.1 is... does what we call statement-based replication. So for each SQL statement you execute as a client application against the MySQL server, it writes that statement into the binary log. And the binary log is what's shipped to the slave and run on the slave. So each SQL query you run on the master is then run on the slave, with a theory of, well, if you run it against the same data set, you get the same result, except for a few things that are non-deterministic and screw you up. But for the most part, it does work as a very efficient replication thing. So there's one or two gotchas in there, but for the most part, and for the vast majority of things, it works quite well, because you just have small bits of SQL to ship across the wire and run. For example, you know, a large delete is fairly efficient to write in SQL, and that's pretty easy to ship across the wire and cheap. What row-based is in 5.1, it's another way to do replication, where we store, instead of the SQL statements, we store the rows that have been affected by those SQL statements. So it's like insert row, update row, delete row. There's sort of a series of commands in the binary log instead of SQL. So if you have a delete statement that deletes 100,000 rows, you have 100,000 delete row things in the binary log instead of one SQL statement. So it's more inefficient for that kind of query, but it also ends up being a bit more precise when you have like write row stuff in there, and helps make sure that everything is replicate. Is able to be replicated. So even if you use like non-deterministic user-defined functions and all that kind of stuff, the rows that change get written to the binary log, which means you should always be able to apply it unless you change your slave. So it is more efficient in some areas, less efficient in some, and also row-based is what's used for cluster-to-cluster replication. We have to use row-based for that. So there's some situations where you have to. There's also a magical mixed mode and something. So it's actually used a bit mixed anyway, because when you do like create table, alter table, drop table and stuff, that's actually used as SQL text in there. That's sort of our data dictionary format is all SQL. So there's mixed stuff as well. Hopefully it clears things up a bit. Also want to mention a bit the Falcon storage engine, which people may have heard of and has been in some previews around the place. I didn't look up whether 6.04 is out now or it will be shortly, but it is going to be out now or out there shortly.
We are not very sure.
We are not very sure. Okay. At some point in the future, there will be a release, probably called 6.04, which is the latest Falcon beta, I think is what they're calling it now. But anyway, the tree's up there as well. So, you know, it's development stuff. Grab the latest source tree. And Falcon's a new engine, a new transactional engine, because we naturally need as much transactional engines as possible. The joke is, write a MySQL storage engine, it's now the current cool thing to do. But Falcon actually has a nice niche of applications that it's good for. It's really optimized for sort of typical web app use, so lots of small, fast transactions, all in memory. So all the transaction states kept in main memory, and then you only write sort of committed data to disk. So the idea is, yes, Falcon performs a lot better when you have a lot of memory in the box, but memory is extremely cheap now, and memory is, you know, orders of magnitude faster than disk. You actually never want to use disk these days, because disk is just, you know, ridiculously slow compared to what we can get out of RAM And you know, how much is 16 gig of RAM this day? It's nothing. It's, can you even buy a server with less than 16 gig? I don't know. 4 gig in a laptop now, I mean, nothing. If your data set's less than 4 gig, you can hold it all in memory. And so this works rather well. Performance for like large, long-running transactions with Falcon, it's not designed for that. It'll cope with them, but it's not when you want to do sort of update 20 billion rows that take 20 gig. That's not what it's done for. It's a lot of smaller transactions that are pretty quick. And it comes from a product that was just designed to do website stuff. So it really is geared for sort of web-type applications. And also pretty useful for things like, you know, text intensive and stuff like that. So hopefully we'll expose some more features that don't have an SQL interface yet. Jim's typical response is, we have full text indexing in there. It's just like, yeah, Jim, just link it up and have it work. But that's definitely not for release one. It's very effective with memory and only goes to disk when need be. It has two parameters, I think, to tune, two or three. It doesn't have a lot of them. It has like row cache size. Yeah, it has row cache size, block cache size.
There's a PDF on the dev site that gives
the overview. Yeah. So it's actually pretty easy to say, use this much memory and use it efficiently, which is pretty nice. And it also, unlike InnoDB, secondary indexes aren't sort of second class citizens. And the fact that primary and secondary indexes, there is no primary and secondary index. Everything's the same performance on the index. InnoDB does, for secondary indexes, you then find the primary key by looking at the secondary index and then look up the row using the primary key. Unless you were just looking for the primary key, in which case it can return it from the secondary index. But with Falcon, they're all even. So it's a bit of a different performance in that way if you're using secondary indexes. Another interesting thing that Falcon supports and Cluster supports as well, and we'll try and beat other engines into supporting it as well. There's a create and drop tablespace command in 5.1, and Falcon's using this as well. So you may be familiar with MyISM tables. You can do like a data dir and index dir. You can specify where to store the data and indexes for the tables. So if you want to split tables over different disks inside the one database, this is fairly easy to specify paths to go to it. People may do this in ODB with either manually creating multiple InnoDB tablespaces with that awful interface in the my.cnf file that someone should be shot for inventing that. But it is possible to create multiple files to use by InnoDB. Or if you use InnoDB file per table, where you have one data file per table for InnoDB tables, so you could then do some foo with splitting it across separate volumes. But Falcon does that automatically, so you can create tablespaces in various locations and specify where you want your tables to be stored. And we do that for cluster as well. So it's basically then you can have easier finer-grained control of where tables are stored, so on which set of disks. So if you have some that are really frequently accessed and small, put them on the fast ones, and other ones put them on slow disks and stuff like that. There is a project to implement foreign keys for every storage engine. Oh, that's right, I have one slide on it. This is, of course, long-running, and the design is actually amazingly tricky. It's very easy to implement foreign keys when you have one storage engine and only care about consistency in that one storage engine. So there's at least three engines on MySQL, including InnoDB, that do foreign keys internally. So you can create foreign keys and have it do various things with that inside. What, of course, is the tricky thing is doing it cross-engine and remotely standards compliant. It turns out there is not a single database in the world that implements completely the SQL standard on foreign keys. Things are close.
Just a question on Falcon Uplift, going back at one step.
Yep.
What's its state at the moment? Like, is it alpha?
Yeah, so Falcon, they're saying about beta. So they've done a lot of performance work. I mean, one of the criteria they have is certain levels of performance for release, as well, of course, as, you know, not crashing and corrupting data. turns out people care about that in their database. Who knew, right? But they say about beta, some people are running it, you know, various levels of success on applications out there, but it's certainly possible to test with and work, and like filing bugs helps a fair bit as well.
File bugs,
Yeah. Your application tests what your application does, not what our tests do.
It's really the testing by user.
Yeah. They even have like binaries and stuff up if you don't want to build it yourself, right?
Yeah. You've had binaries for quite a while.
We've had binaries for quite a while now. test away. I mean, there's also like known lists of bugs and stuff up there which can either be pulled out of the bug system or probably in release notes. But they are working fairly hard to fix things up as well. The Maria tree as well, currently, Monty tells me, they had one known bug that was being fixed and should be pushed by now. But apart from that, they're wanting other people to hammer on it to find other bugs, because the team there has fixed everything they could find at least. Which of course means that, you know, 200 people are going to find something they think's obvious, but you know, that's always the case with new software. But there is this project for generic foreign key support. What's the current status apart from lots of design talks? And there's lots of design talks and there's pseudocode around and there's code and algorithms and we had discussions with lots of storage engine people working out how the hell we could actually implement this. But at some point in the future, there will be foreign key support and have some notion of consistency between storage engines, which is incredibly scary when you have foreign keys between engines. But it is coming in something in the future, but there's several engines that do it now anyway. And no one else is screaming about foreign keys, that's good. MySQL Workbench, which was launched as there was an alpha of it in 2007? Was it 2006? It's beta now, but there was an alpha and now they have a beta. Yeah. So MySQL Workbench is a GUI tool that's for designing and editing databases, and includes it can read like SQL dumps or connect to a MySQL server and reverse engineer diagrams of your database and relationships and stuff between it. Their current betas are Windows, and I pleaded with Mike, is there anything I can show anyone at LinuxConf? And he said, well, we only have the Windows ones now, but we've got all the porting stuff still there running, we're just only sort of stabilizing one platform at a time. Traditionally, the GUI tools team has been extremely, extremely overloaded and asked to do 400,000 things at once. So focusing on one thing at a time is good. But sometimes sort of betas, let's go change that. So he said likely later this year. I actually have sort of more closer dates from him than that, but sort of sometime this year there should also be like Linux and OS 10 binaries out there and stuff. So they've all got this, all their widgets are portable and everything, so it's pretty easy for them to fix all the platform-specific stuff. But that's actually a rather cool tool. If you want to go, no one actually designed a database, let's see if we can construct a diagram so we can work out what it does and what's going on. So that's pretty useful. There's also online backup. If anyone's doing backup of MySQL servers, does anyone believe in backups? Does anyone not believe in backups? Yeah, you'll be the ones with the large data sets. MySQL Hot Copy, which does it's more warm copying than hot copying. That's a good description of it, warm copying. There's also InnoDB Hot Backup, which is InnoDB's commercial tool for like, was it $1,000 or something? Which only does InnoDB tables. So you combine that with MySQL Hot Copy and you end up with something that approaching an online backup for two engines. But there is an online backup project to have an online backup infrastructure for all engines. So you type backup into the SQL console and you get out a stream that's a backup of everything on the MySQL server. So it's all integrated in there. And there's, the idea is that it comes out with a stream like you would out of tar. That means you can like write it to tape or anything that's like a linear writing device. It doesn't seek while writing a backup, which is pretty cool. There's different backup drivers, so there's different methods that it uses to run backups. So there's like ones that will block. So some engines, it says, right, well, let's just lock the table and copy all the data out from it. There's non-blocking, so some engines can continue to run transactions against it while it's doing a backup, and it's all engine-specific. If your engine supports the repeatable read isolation level, does everyone know what that means? Okay, Repeatable read means if you run a if you're inside a transaction with a repeatable read, you run a select, some other transaction inserts rows into that table, you run the select again, it's going to get the same results. So the idea is that you get a repeatable read while other actions are going on. So it's sort of transaction isolation. And then everyone can have an academic discussion about what this all actually means with like metadata and stuff like that. But that's the basics of it. So for engines like InnoDB, you can actually just start a read transaction on a table, try to start a transaction and read everything out there. Updates happily happen with other threads, and that will get a consistent view of all the InnoDB tables. So MySQL dump can do that to get a consistent backup of the server. There's also some native to engines. So like the archive storage engine has a native driver that also gets a consistent backup. So the whole idea is that you get a consistent image of your MySQL server in a backup. So it's not an inconsistent, it is consistent, which is a somewhat holy grail, while allowing as many transactions to go on as possible. We have a whole bunch of new stuff with MySQL Cluster and coming up with MySQL Cluster. We have something called Carrier Grade Edition, MySQL Cluster Carrier Grade Edition, which is basically a fork of 5.1 with a lot of extra features for MySQL Cluster added in, including modifications inside the MySQL server that we don't want to sort of destabilize 5.1. But so we have extra features in there. In 2007, we saw like 6.1, 6.2, 6.3, and in 2008, we'll see 6.4. So we do something, we do things now. We're going in to have end-in compatibility, so having nodes in the cluster of different CPU architectures. So you can run like Spark and x86 in the same cluster. Sorry, I should say this properly. So you can run your legacy Spark machines and have them join the cluster. yeah, and now that we've been bought by Sun, it's also hilarious when we look at it that way. We've done work to have up to 255 API nodes in the cluster, which is a big boost for us. Done work on compressed backup and local checkpoints using less disk space, as in sacrifice CPU to use less disk space for running cluster, and especially useful for having more backups. Because cluster is used a lot in telco industries, there is a form factor used in telco data centers that really restricts the amount of disks you can have in there. It's basically you get your two-year-old hardware for like, you know, 100,000 times the price. But it fits in the special form factor and power usage stuff. So you have really limited how much disk space you can have in the nodes there. So it's really useful for telco people. We're doing more and more performance monitoring and lock monitoring and stuff like that, so you can get way more info out of the cluster to know what's going on. We also are the only engine to actually support online add column. Traditionally with MySQL, when you do alter table of any kind, including adding a column, it copies the table. So it creates a new table that looks how you want the table to be and copies everything into it. For cluster, we have the ability to add a column online. So you go, alter table, add column, and you get it instantly without waiting for any table copies, and all read and write transactions can keep going. Some other engines do support that in the background. Falcon is one I know, and they've sworn to support it as soon as they have a spare 10 minutes to write the code in the MySQL server to do it. So other engines should support it as well. We've also done a lot of performance optimizations for cluster, and I was talking previously about the batch key join, so that should be a big boost for people running joins with cluster. And I didn't actually put just things I've worked on up there, so I thought that was pretty cool. MySQL proxy is something new as well. It's a program that sits between the client and the server, so some client speaking the MySQL protocol to the MySQL server, and you can do stuff in the middle there. So it's got Lua scripts that you run in there to do things like load balance or rewrite queries or always return 42 instead of an actual result set, or you know, sort of whatever you can do, and Giuseppe's talking about that later as well. So that's sort of my list of upcoming things with MySQL that is nothing to do with 5.1. It's all beyond in the future. I'm a developer. I live in the future. Who cares about these old stable releases? But do we have any other questions about things or even questions about previous stuff? It's to have a different, it's aimed at a different set of transaction stuff and different set of performance, and it is sort of meant to be better with sort of larger data sets and more data warehousing applications and stuff like that, which is traditionally what MyISAM was written for, data warehousing. You know, load a crap load of rows in there and run queries against it all. So it will do, it's actually the format for Maria is very similar to MyISM. It's sort of like the next version of it. And so one of the things is definitely being better with data warehousing these days as well. Just as there is only one true file system, there is one true storage engine. And there's no ideal way for everything. And there's like, yeah, there's distinctly different algorithms and methods of doing things between them all that just get better for each thing. I mean, there's other engines out there dealt for data warehousing of much larger things. You know, there's some engines with partners that say, well, anything smaller than like 50 gigabytes, you know, we're crap on. But, you know, you can run queries over a terabyte and we're okay with that. So there is distinctly different optimizations for things. Yeah. I mean, for example, cluster also provides very deterministic behavior. And yeah, other engines don't do that. They are more approximate than our things of close to real time. Cool. Other questions?
We've got about 4 or 5 minutes before the meeting.
Quick question just on monitoring with cluster.
Yeah?
Elaborate a bit on that.
Monitoring on cluster. I've been working on something we've called NDB.info, which, among other things, will achieve world peace and solve world poverty and hunger. But its basic idea is to have a whole bunch of fake tables inside the SQL server that expose details from inside the cluster. So you run select queries on this set of tables that are all inside resources and cluster. So instead of doing like all dump 1,000 to find out how much data memory and index memory is used, you'll go select star from NDB info dot memory, and for everything that's memory inside cluster, you'll get how much is currently used, how much total there is per node, so you can also see when upgrades are happening. And for things like operation records, they'll be in tables and stuff as well. It is separate from information schema because I don't wish to pollute that namespace, or Peter Gulletson may kill me with the amount of tables we're going to put in there. Yeah, mainly because from inside the MySQL server, it's fairly easy to add information schema tables. The problem with the current implementation of information schema is each table is materialized. And if you think about in cluster, you know, if you have 250,000 operation records, materializing that for every query is going to be intensely painful, as well as putting a fair load on the cluster, having to ship 250,000 rows every time someone runs a query on that. So we're actually doing it as sort of a separate query infrastructure that will even have a sort of pushdown conditions in there that will enable things to be a bit nicer. But yeah, I've been working on infrastructure and we're doing more stuff on actually getting data out of the cluster. So there'll be a couple of us working on it for a little while. But real soon now, and I've promised code in a week.
Can you put back the schedule so people without a reason to come back after the
schedule, yes. MySQL miniconf. Yep. Anything else? If I'd up any features and other products that, ooh, that'd be nice to have.
Actually, I've got one that may relate to that.
Yeah?
That I'm curious about, because the status seems to change every time I look at it. And that's authentication and authorization.
Authentication, authorization, and pluggable authentication stuff? I got no idea, but that would be cool.
I think that's the general view.
Patches, happily accepted.
Pluggable, but I think at the moment it's kind of shelved and not happening.
Yeah, there was something called 5.1 that should be released, I think, was the problem. On Brian's laptop. So if you get Brian's laptop, then you get that pluggable authentication modules. I'd like to see more integration with Memcache. I'd like it to get more trivial to use Memcache with SQL queries. And, I mean, because so many people use it anyway, and everyone writes their own code there. If it's, like, integrated in the client library or something, I think it'd be just really cool to be able to sort of add a flag that says, this is something you can use in Memcache and just be trivial. Oh, something's happening on that. Great. My favorite features are when I think of them and then get somebody else to implement them.
Last question for morning, Dean. Anyone? All right.
What is morning,
Dean? Back at the registration area.
Otherwise, feel free to ask me questions at any point in the week.
Just a very quick question I don't think anyone else would be interested in. Would Falcon be something